I'd like to introduce our second speaker now, Mrs. Georgie Somerset. Georgie is a rural communications consultant and she's the president of the Queensland Rural Women's Network. She's going to talk this morning about sustaining the people who sustain our communities. Please welcome Georgie.
And I think I'm going for half lights because you might want to look at the screen but you might not want to as well, and I'm keen for you to take notes if you want to. A few years ago I actually heard, and I wonder if I can just swivel this while I do this, I heard the founder of Saatchi & Saatchi talk about his recruitment process, and it really resonated with me because it opened my eyes to a way that I could give back and help others. And he talked about his recruitment process being like a babushka doll, but just like this one, and I'll undo it in a moment. And he said if he saw himself as the largest doll, Saatchi & Saatchi would go nowhere. So he saw himself as the very smallest doll in the centre. So he saw himself as the smallest one. And what he said was, this way the organisation could grow, and it could grow bigger and greater than he could ever imagine, because he'd be recruiting people who were wiser, more connected and smarter than he was. And my challenge is for each of you to think about, how can you create a babushka doll where you recruit and you support and you mentor the people who are wiser than you? Because I think that's what we need to do in rural communities. And it's simply what Sylvia's just been talking about, is about supporting each other. And I think often we're different stages of the doll. Sometimes we're the tiny doll, sometimes we are the person who's in control. And we move through different phases at different times in our communities. So my challenge today for you is actually to have that courage. And on the way down yesterday I read that the word courage comes from the French word for heart, cœur. So you have to have heart to have courage, to invest in people and to mentor those who are brighter and wiser, to be willing to lose the control, to actually invest in others and invest in that human capacity. And I really congratulate the Cotton Community CRC for taking the time to talk about people today. As Sylvia said, it's often something that's neglected. In business, you can only be promoted if you do mentor someone behind you. You can't move forward unless someone else is doing your job. And I think one of our challenges today in rural communities is that we neglect to replace ourselves, and we struggle to become redundant. That we see that as something we are almost fearful of being redundant, and yet to progress we need to encourage someone else to take our role so that we can be redundant and move forward. But to achieve... I'm not working now. That's fine. We need the people, so we really need to invest in them to actually make the community strong and to build them up. I find that, and I probably have about 25 years of community organisations, our meetings often revolve around bricks and mortar, our grants revolve around things, we talk about marketing, research, project plans, strategic plans, and we often neglect the people. But the important thing that I've come back to recently, and I'm a current participant of the Australian Rural Leadership Foundation and really support Sylvia's comments about the personal growth that these types of investments in yourself can make. But the layers need to be built if we're going to have the strength in our communities and our community organisations. I'm seeing a drop-off in the strength at a community level, that people are moving on and becoming more skilled and more talented, but then they're not necessarily making sure that the people behind them have the confidence to take on the community role that they used to fill. We often say people are important, but often we don't bother to invest in the people who are important. So today I want to talk about investing in people, the results of not investing in people, and the legacy that each of us in this room might leave by investing in people. Looking at the return on investment, we talk about return on investment in business all the time. It's one of those things bandied around. We talk about ROI on land and capital, on cash flow, on each of our projects. We talk about it in community groups. It's more difficult to measure the return on investment in people. And yet there are tools out there to do this. And I guess my challenge is that the hard money, the hard things won't happen unless we invest in some of those soft skills and the soft management. And I think that's a thing we all struggle with. Looking at some of the businesses that I talk to and looking at some research, recruitment agencies cost the loss of an employee in the first year of employment at 3 times their annual salary, plus the recruitment cost of around about 20 to 30%. Now that's a dollar figure. I'd like you to think about that in a community tech context. That if that's what it is for a big business in an office block where they can replace someone with those technical skills, what's the cost if we're looking for someone who fits into our community, who is a volunteer in our organisation, who contributes far more than what they've ever been paid? And what's the cost if we lose them from our community to the wider, in the wider context? Actually investing in people, getting them to fit your organisation, going through the process of induction, even for volunteers, and it's an enormous investment. So how do we recognise them so that they'll actually want to stay? The other research that I think is really interesting is that cash reward and wages, and this will be a relief for some people in the room who are responsible for the wages and the cash flow, wages are actually well down the list of how people want to be recognised and what they're looking for in a job. They're looking for job satisfaction that revolves around being recognised. So at Westpac the other day, there is a Westpac person here, but I was informed by the HR manager that what employees were looking for was actually recognition. Recognition from their peers, from their senior leadership, and also from their customers. And they preferred that to a cash reward. At Microsoft, they moved to shift the responsibility to the leaders so that they would actually take responsibility for the decisions they made. They wouldn't blame the traffic jam. They wouldn't blame someone else in the team. They wouldn't blame the financial crisis. They took responsibility, and what occurred was an incredible shift in productivity, both at a team level and at a corporate level. Microsoft's motto became, "Work is something you do, not somewhere you go." And I think that's quite powerful to think about that, because in communities, I believe a lot of our people, that's exactly what it is. Work is something they do. It's not somewhere they go to. They live and breathe the community work or the organisation work they do. I bet when Sylvia's on holidays and she goes to a regional community, she's still thinking FRRR. It's ingrained in many of us in rural communities to take responsibility. And we need to give that responsibility to others in our organisation and enable them to have that responsibility as well, rather than blame them or take that opportunity away from them. I just want to talk about a mentoring program I was involved in a couple of years ago, and I'm sure many of the people in the room have been involved in mentoring, both formally and informally. This program ran for young women, and it was mentoring, leadership and networking, and it ran across 3 communities, the WA Wheatbelt, Victoria's Gippsland, and the Wide Bay Burnett in Queensland. And the measurable benefits, looking about return on investment, for these mentees was significant. So a rise from 52 to 94% in those who believed After 12 months of being mentored, and a couple of workshops and some support, and then they became mentees and mentors themselves, they believed they had the ability to pursue their goals. 26% to 75% now felt confident to mentor others, to hand on their skills, to build their babushka doll. A rise from 58% to 87% of those who saw an active role in their community that would grow over time. That's exciting for those of us who say that young people don't want to help and we don't have enough people. And the last one is 63% to 91% who believed they had the ability to make a difference in their community. I think at the beginning, a lot of these young women saw themselves as a very, very small babushka doll in the context that there were so many other people brighter and smarter. And yet simply through quite a targeted but simple program, their esteem was lifted significantly. Some of the anecdotal comments from the Why They Burn It were equally powerful. So these are recipient responses. I now realise that I do have skills I can contribute to my community. I am more aware, confident and assertive in what I say and do. And the third one, the full quote was, it was just what I needed. I've been out of the workforce for 5 years. I had lost my self-confidence. I wanted to prove to myself that there was more to me than just being a mum. These are not unusual results from supporting and investing. This pilot program laid out the guidelines for how people could go about implementing a leadership network and mentoring program in regional Australia. Unfortunately, it was a pilot. It's not been refunded. It hasn't become mainstream. And the investment per mentee was about $2,000. And the return on investment for those communities, I believe, over time is significant. Another program is the Country Education Foundation of Australia, and I found out yesterday that Jocelyn Jansen is actually a Narrabri local and was really hoping to be here. Since 1994, the Country Education Foundation has distributed almost $800,000 in grants to 807 young people. And a couple of the quotes from recipients of these, which are around young people doing skilling and training, university courses, apprenticeships. It's really good to know that people are supporting you. When there's heaps of people pushing you forwards, you can't go backwards. It's just a great quote. And the full part of the second quote, it's a big part of getting at the community scholarship, is someone saying, you're doing a good job. Keep going. We're proud of you and you are making a difference. You are also letting the family realise their dreams. My mum and dad never considered that going to university was even conceivable. So for the investment of about $1,000 to help with their textbooks, or their tools of trade, these are the sort of comments that have come back from young people. Again, I think the return on investment, these people are speaking not just about the money. They're talking about the support and the encouragement, the mentoring and the wisdom that's being passed on to them in the babushka doll model. Similarly, the Rural Industries Research and Development Corporation have continued to fund their Rural Women's Award, and the people in this audience have been recipients of that, and I was a runner-up. The interesting thing is that they've now added another layer, that the alumni of that program now have access to training and programs. They didn't see that as a dead end, that they're continuing to invest in that group and seeing it as an audience that they can work with. One of the challenges, I think, for a lot of us in rural communities is whether we actually value training as a budget item. And I'll revert slightly to a business owner here because I'm not sure we're raised to value people as our most important asset in a business. We see them in the community as our most important asset, and that's what our communities are about. But in a business sense, I think we invest more heavily in the tractor, the header, the irrigation equipment and the new bull than we do in our training and our people. I'm not sure that our investment in training is assessed quite as clinically as the new youth purchase. And I'd argue that spending the money on training is seen as an extra. During the Farm Biz program in Queensland, the managers ran research on the demographic and uptake. And what we identified was that there was about 20% of primary producers and natural resource managers who were willing to pay for training. They went and accessed the training they wanted. They found it. They continued to invest in it. And it was strategic thinking skills. It was around business planning, communication, investing in their plans and so forth. There was then about 60% of producers who were not interested in training unless they could see a direct correlation with their bottom line. So the strategic thinking skills that were being subsidised at the time and offered by trainers wasn't relevant to these people because they couldn't see the correlation. There was then about another 20% who were only interested in training if it had a regulatory requirement attached to it. One of the challenges for each of us here, I think, is that there are probably a lot of the 20% in this room who access training as they need it, they know what their needs are, they've analysed it. How do we then champion training to some of the 60% so that they can see value for their businesses? Because I believe those strategic thinking skills, those communication, human relationship management skills, will make a big difference to our communities and our organisations. I believe that they'll be better negotiators with their banks and their suppliers, they'll be better able to lead their communities, they'll be able to work with their families more effectively, manage succession planning, business transfer. If we don't value these skills as a community and businesses, it's very difficult then to expect others to take the lead and invest in them. And if we don't talk about the fact that it's important to invest in these skills, who will talk about it? Because they're certainly not about to. Moving on to grants and things, I get constantly challenged about, and I think FRRR is fantastic, and I'm president of an organisation which is a recipient, but I'm often referring people to FRRR. It's one of the few where grants aren't just focused on things, but many grants are focused on things, not people. But in communities, we focus on tangibles. We want to see things built. And we measure things, not people. And it's about investing in those things rather than people. And as I mentioned earlier, if pay rates and wages are about 4 or 5 on a scale of 1 to 10, how then do we actually recognise those people? What's important about it? And I think the thing is we actually need to be clear about what we're trying to achieve when we do invest in people. And we talk about the training and we talk about the encouragement. We need to be clear what success will look like. If we don't invest in people, the evidence is that their lack of recognition and the lack of personal well-being from their workplace will have significant impact. We know that 1 in 5 people in Australia will suffer from depression, and my belief is that the lack of investing and encouraging and mentoring other people has a significant impact on the mental health and well-being of rural communities. And I think the statistics we see around poor business planning, poor succession planning, and the uptake of the requirement for business and social welfare agencies, and there are many in this room, that we are not seeing people taking some responsibility and actually investing in these skills. We see young people leaving our rural communities. We have new people coming in, and we're trying to work to keep them. We need to do things differently in the future if we want to achieve a different outcome. If we keep doing in our rural communities what we've done for 20 years or 30 years and invest in things and not in the people, it will be madness to expect that things will be different in 20 years' time. And I think that's what these 3 days are about. How can we do things differently going forward so that we have strong rural communities in the future? How are each of us personally investing in those people? I'm conscious the last 10 years in rural communities have been difficult, but for the last 5 years I've been doing drought assessments, and I'm constantly inspired by people that I meet on those tours who, despite the seasonal impact, see beyond that, see business opportunities, see succession planning opportunities, innovate, change enterprise, and see change as a natural sequence of life. That their enterprise will not be the same next year as it was 5 years ago, and that that's quite normal, and that they've got the capacity to do that. And they inspire me that there are people like that right across Australia facing the same climatic conditions as others. Unfortunately, they're not the majority, and they're the people that we really need to support and be champions for others. I just want to talk a little bit about legacy and bricks and mortar. I think something like the Jetty Project is very exciting. But I want you to think about the legacy that you're going to create in your community. Sylvia talked about in perpetuity with philanthropy. What's the perpetuity you're creating in your community? Are you going to need to be there for it to keep going? Or will the perpetuity be something that you built or something that you ran? What's your legacy going to be? I had a bit of a look at what legacy is, and I love that fabulous Wikipedia. Sometimes it comes up with very interesting definitions, but I quite liked this one. Legacy is what someone or something is remembered for, or what they have left behind that is remembered, revered, or has impacted current events and the present day. So legacy is an opportunity to impact today and into the future. Last year I contacted a grant administrator locally about a regional leadership program, and it was explained to me that this company sought to invest in legacy projects. And like all good applicants, I said, and what does that mean? What's a legacy project for your company? It was highlighted that this was bricks and mortar. They liked buildings. And I said, do you think that people in our region might be a legacy? And she explained to me that they might leave, and then there'd be no legacy. I didn't pursue the conversation with her, but I did get off the phone, and my inward response, which probably wasn't as calm as this morning, was that perhaps people are more likely to leave our region if we don't invest in them, if we don't see them as our legacy. That maybe if we invested in them, they might just stay. Or they might stay a bit longer and they might put something back. And that when they've left, they might have left a bigger bugushka doll than they were when they were there. But I haven't actually heard about the application, so I'm assuming it was unsuccessful. I do love that when you never hear, just wanders off into the distance. But I wonder how many of you have thought this way as well, that when you're applying for something, that it's around bricks and mortar. Or whether you've struck that same thing, you'd like to run a program. I had another leadership program I applied for, but instead they funded a strategic plan for the region to join the strategic plan done 5 years ago that still hasn't been enacted because we haven't invested in the people to carry out the strategic plan. I won't go on because I could get quite challenged and a little heated here. So how do we influence those investments that are made in rural communities? How do we redesign our application so that the focus is on the people? How do you, as the influencers in your community, and I think there are significant influences for rural Australia in this room right now, what's the legacy going to be for you about investing in people instead of things? I think one of the challenges is that there won't be a plaque that you can put on these people. Someone pointed out to me that if we'd invested the Building Education Revolution money in teachers, we'd have a much better legacy than a whole lot of demountable buildings that in 50 years' time won't be functional. But I said, unfortunately, you can't put a plaque on every student so that someone knows who spent the money. And the great thing about philanthropy is the lack of desire to be constantly recognised and the degree of anonymity. I think it takes courage and it requires skills to actually influence these decisions. And I think there are programs out there, but I think we need to work very hard for them. So I just want to come back to the babushka doll again, and I want you to think about what you can do to encourage and employ people in your business, in your community, in your volunteers, so that they're smarter, wiser and bigger than you can ever be, so that you are redundant, that you can move on to other things, knowing that you've left in place a solid framework. So I'll leave you with my three challenges. It's not coming up. That you have the courage to invest in people, have the heart to invest in them, that you mentor those brighter and wiser, and you invest in our human capacity. And my vision would be that in 10 or 15 years' time, our rural communities are far greater than we could imagine them to be. because the people in this room bothered to build their babushka dolls so that they're the tiny one and the people that follow them are the ones who go beyond. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Georgie. I think maybe we all believe it, but it's encouraging to hear that all the speakers are talking about investment in people being important and being employer of choice being important as opposed to perhaps the dollars. There's room for time for, I think, one question, if there's one question out there. Down the front here.
In the dark. Yeah. I need some light.
Georgie, it's one of those fundamental problems is that we place people on the expense side of the ledger. Everything, whatever we want to do, needs to be funded, and that's about the fellowship and about the really place to make things on the mechanical basis. So the fundamental problem is we put people on the expense side of the ledger. We call them liabilities, in effect, instead of putting them on the asset side of the business. In terms of communities, do you have any views about how we might begin to change that mental attitude about how we fund the community issues?
I think that's exactly what I was saying. We expect a return on investment, and unfortunately we can't. We're not good at measuring that from people because we see returns in dollars, not necessarily in human capacity. I think that's about being really clear about what you're wanting to achieve from the people that you've got. So in a community organisation, why have you got those people and what's the role they're playing? And if you're clear about the outcomes, then what you invest to ensure that that person can achieve those outcomes and probably exceed them becomes the investment rather than just an expense. Because at the end of it, you've got an outcome that you were focused on achieving. But I think too often, look, it's really easy with a crop. You put the crop in, you either get it or you don't, and you can measure the quality, the yield, and so forth. With people and projects, I think we often set off on projects without a clear goal in mind. And we need to be really clear about what we're trying to achieve and that person is going to be the critical investment in achieving that project. But too often we go off on a project without really understanding why we've embarked on it. So I think that to turn that around, if you're clear about why you're investing in the project and you see people as part of that investment, then you can measure the return more effectively. But you're right, we need to see them as an asset.
I'm sorry to cut the question short, but Georgie, I'm sure I'll be happy to talk to you at morning tea or any other time during the day. Please join me in thanking Georgie.